I have become a spice man. And it occurred to me that we should have a new specialty, spiceology. So if you go to the best website for getting the recipes and some detailed information about this program, there's a new website. It is alihealing.org. That's easy to remember, right? In fact, if you just put my name, Ali, and then put the word healing, it'll take you to that website. And that's where I give you all the recipes. But there are a lot of other interesting stuff that I put on this, focusing on healing stories, healing animal stories, the breathing things, all the simple things that I talk about in this program. Oxygen therapies, castor oil rubs, sesame oil gargles. So I believe that focus on spices will substantially reduce the cost of supplementation that we take. And coming close to the kitchen, I think it has some value beyond just the value of lowering insulin and getting rid of diabetes. I think that food, there's a sanctity to the place where you prepare food. And of course, that will slowly and steadily bring the family together. But those of you who have children, little by little, if your children watch you prepare your own breakfast, this becomes a part of your reality, their reality. If they never see you spend some time in the kitchen, then this is not part of your reality. This is not part of their reality. This is the time that I should take leave. It's been Science, Health, and Healing. I'm your host, Majid Ali. Please go to WBI.org. Sign up, becoming a BI buddy. You should be part of this. You should own a part of this. Voice of Courage, WBI. So until we meet again next Wednesday at the same time, 11 p.m., may you be gracious, graceful, and generous in your spirit.
Tuned to WBAI Radio in New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org. Coming up is a very special edition of Earthwatch, and it's going to be a live adventure, so stay tuned. that was the original production from Hair of Aquarius. And you're listening to a live version of Earthwatch. I'm Catherine Davis, and I am joined in studio by Paulette Spencer. Hello, Paulette.
Hello, Catherine.
And we are here to celebrate Robert Knight's 65th birthday, which would have been September 6th. And so we have invited some of his friends, family, and guests that he's had in the past so that they can speak to us about their memories and offer their tributes to Robert Knight. And I think that both Paulette and myself will offer our tributes. Certainly I remember Robert from way back in the Contra Gate days. And he was he cut quite a figure. He was always dressed very, very sharp. He was always, he had a sharp mind, he had a sharp wit, and he was a sharp dresser, and he was always moving in the world as a perfect storm. Everything about him was just right. I know you wanted to share a few things.
Certainly, I know him as the perfect storm, and I know also what he was like when he was more of the calm within the mm-hmm. storm. And we sort of celebrate his life and his legacy by having Earthwatch revisited, so that we can share with you some of his early work and see how the message that he put across in the early years actually is still quite relevant today. Robert passed away on April 16th, 2014, and the cause of his death was leukemia, which is the cancer of the blood. And he was receiving treatment for that, and through complications, he transitioned. And as we're speaking about Robert, we know that he wore many hats. And he was certainly the journalist, he was certainly an educator and a civil rights activist and a true believer in the importance of community, and he trusted the community. And one aspect of him we all know is him as the comedian, with the sharp wit, with the sense of irony and satire and punning. And a few days ago we had the pleasure of watching him from the show on Comedy Central, The Daily Show, where he had his own segment on three episodes. That was back in 1997. Mm-hmm. And so that was just quite a little delicious treat to see that that he could hold his own in a Comedy Central environment.
Yeah, that was the mainstream.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So we're delighted this evening to have quite a few speakers, which include childhood friends, members of the international and domestic intelligence community, nuclear engineers, fellow journalists, relatives, and musicians. Mm-hmm. And we are happy to make this happen. This is a first, and so we are pleased to bring you along with our journey.
Exactly. And first up, we're going to hear an interview that Paulette Spencer recorded with Vernon Cole, who is a teacher and a friend of Robert Knight from City College. And as we make that transition into that piece of, really interesting conversation, we're going to play a little bit of music, and this is Stevie Wonder.
Flowing free and through when came the tears.
Spencer here for the Earthwatch special for September 10th, 2014. This show is in special memory of Robert Knight, who passed away a few months ago in April. And we are here speaking with Mr. Vernon Cole, who was a friend of Robert in Robert's earlier years. And so I welcome you, Mr. Cole.
Well, thank you so much for having me, thank you for the privilege of, you know, being able to respond to and being a part of this occasion. When we look at Robert Knight, we are looking at an example, a product of an age. You know, we're looking at Robert in a context.
What is that context?
Well, coming out of the 1950s and the 1960s, we see struggles for equality and civil rights and class mobility. And we see that minorities were demanding greater access to middle class living, to higher education, higher paying job, class mobility. This was the era of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And coming out of this context, we began to look at what was going on actually in New York City. We saw that 5% of CUNY population, or maybe less, were minority students. You had City College, which was in the heart of Harlem, and there were maybe about 3% of the student body that was black. And people began to look at this, and they had problems with this, you know. And so people began to say, well, you know, we want our children to be educated. We want our children to aspire. We want our children to be more. We want our children to be all that they can be. And, you know, Martin Luther King is going around the country talking about liberating the South. But, you know, let's take a look at what's happening up here, you know. And so there were many programs that began to open up. You know, we had the beginning of the open admissions programs at the CUNY colleges. And as students began to come into CUNY, they began to want to look at our history and our events and our issues from a new perspective. Campus groups began to form at various community colleges. Here in Bronx, for instance, they had the Young Simbas at Bronx Community College. They had Kubambanya, We Who Are Seeking, at Hunter College, the Uptown campus, which later becomes Lehman. You had Katara, which was at NYU's Uptown campus, the Heights campus, which would later become Bronx Community College campus. And students began to seek and search out answers. They were looking for something. This was an age of students who really wanted to define themselves, and they were reaching to gain information that would help them craft and sculpt their identity. And as a result of this, you began to get a new young student scene. Young minority students began to give parties and have social gatherings, and all over the city, people were getting together in coffee houses, at parties, and they were talking about our history and our issues and how we could come together to create solutions for things that were confronting us as a people. And they discussed art and history and music and all the relevant topics for our age. And on the Upper West Side, on Central Park West and Riverside Drive and up in Harlem, you know, you began to have groups that would get together and they would have these discussions. And that's where I met Robert Knight. That's where I met Robert Knight, you know, in these salons. You know, I knew Ted Fleming and several other writers and poets and artists and people that were just in the know. And, you know, they would frequent these different salons and these different types of activities. And they would always have discussions. And Robert would be there invariably. And he would be sitting down, listening and talking. And, you know, we were all thrown together because we were all in the same age cohort. I was several years older than Robert. But we were all searching, we were all interested, and we all wanted to be informed. And usually, you know, the older teachers and professors and clergy members and various people that would be at the parties would be telling you about the Harlem that they knew and, you know, different experiences that they had gone through in the civil rights struggles in the South where they came from. And
I have a question. In terms of the timing, more or less what time period was this? Was this in the early or mid-70s?
Well, you're actually talking about the 1960s, the late 1960s coming into the 70s.
Okay.
And there's a flourishing of information, people wanting to know, people wanting to become involved, people wanting to understand, and really people coming together in ways that they hadn't done before and just wanting to learn. And I think that this was a big outpouring from the 60s that sort of spilled over into the 70s and all the issues that were involved. Civil rights was still an issue. The war in Vietnam was an issue. Martin Luther King was saying that we had to take a lot of the insights that we had gained in the civil rights era and apply them to what was going on with the war in Vietnam. And these kinds of things were the things that were driving, you know, young college students, the draft, and, you know, the Nixon era. All these things were swarming around in your head. And as young college students, this is what we were caught in the middle of. And we were searching and looking, and we needed teachers. We needed people that, you know, were going to show us and help us. We were looking for those alpha males and alpha females that had had the experience and were willing to bring us into this new renaissance, if you will.
And in terms of your friendship with Robert, what can you let us in on what type of person he was at that time of his life?
Okay, well, you know, Robert was a very young, serious, sensitive, very bright, but cautious young man. The confidence and aggression that we see in a later Robert were merely seeds then. But he had an inquisitive mind, and he always wanted to know. And he had an eye for perfection. He was looking to perfect himself and actually to perfect his knowledge. You know, he wanted to be knowledgeable. He wanted to gain insight. He wanted to know the workings of things. He looked at how people and situations interplayed and played themselves out. He was very observant, and he was articulate, but he was cautious. He wasn't the Robert that we know on the radio program. He bided his words, and he held back. He consulted with people for advice and information before he proceeded forward. So you see a very young, sensitive, intelligent mind developing and trying to perfect itself and gain the necessary tools and the necessary workings so that he could go on to become the Robert Knight that we know today.
Hmm. And I know that there was sort of a gap in time in regard to when you saw him last, and I guess the most recent time that you met him again, which would have been about 5 years ago, I'm guessing. And what was that reunion like?
Well, you know, even though we had not seen each other physically, I tuned into BAI, and I listened to BAI and Pacifica, and I read and I was aware of Robert's movement and how he had perfected himself and moved on as a journalist, you know, and he had certainly, beyond being a reporter at the city paper, the paper at CUNY, and he was now a world-class, very articulate, very knowledgeable, and very informed and informative broadcaster and journalist.
And I'm going to thank you for this insight into sort of the development of Robert Knight from his younger years into the years that we, most of us, know him. And I'm going to ask you to add anything that you want us to know about him before we close out the interview.
Well, I want you to know that there is a very subtle side to Robert that doesn't always come across in the shows. Robert was a very human, a very loving, and a very caring person. And he had very deep feelings about people and the way that they should be treated. And he had a world view and a context in which he saw how people in the world should interact with each other and care for one another and be responsible for one another. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't come across, but Robert was a caring, loving person. And he cared about people. He cared about the predicaments that they were in. He was empathetic to their sufferings and their plights. And he wanted to make the world a better place. Now, you may not have agreed with his opinions and some of his methods and some of the things that he wanted to do, but, you know, when you came now to the bottom line and when you weighed everything out, Robert was very, very human, humanistic, and Robert had a feel for people.
Well, that's a wonderful note on which we can end this interview. And so, therefore, I thank you so much, Vernon Cole, for sharing this very intimate view of Robert that very few other people have. And so, thank you so much for being there for us.
And thank you very much. And, you know, I want to say to all the people that are listening, because I know that he has some very devoted listeners, you know, Robert really cared about your opinions, and he really, really enjoyed the fact that you listened to him and that, you know, he felt that he was trying to give you a service. He was trying to provide something for you. Through his program, and that was the right to know and to understand so that you could act appropriately.
Wow. Thank you.
And, thank you.
And on that note, we end this interview. Thank you very much, Vernon.
All right.
To welcome Mr. Wayne Madsen. Hello, Mr. Madsen. This is Paulette Spencer. Welcome to our program.
Hi, good to be with you this evening.
Thank you. I'm just going to give a bit of an introduction of you. We know that you're an investigative journalist, author, and columnist specializing in intelligence and international affairs, and you're the author of the blog with Wayne Madsen Report, and that you have published several publications, and you're a frequent contributor to the Alex Jones Show, and you've appeared as a guest on Al Jazeera, Russia Today, Press TV, and CNBC. And we thank you very much for taking the time out to be with us this evening in memory of Robert Knight.
Yes, well, it's good to be with you, and, you know, it's always with a great sigh when I call real shoe-leather journalists leave us like Robert. And when I look at the what we have on, you know, television, even in newspapers today. Every time somebody who lives by the old maxim of the job of a journalist is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, when those journalists leave us, it's always, as I say, with a huge sigh, and, you know, there's no one around to replace. Unfortunately, I wish I could be more upbeat, but there'd be people to replace people like Robert, but they're so hard to find these days because of the control over the media by corporations and special interests and whatnot. So, you know, I just really want to say that Robert will be so missed because of what he gave to the world of journalism.
And what was your experience as an interviewee when you spoke with Robert?
Well, I mean, it was always refreshing to, field questions that, from somebody who understands, some of these issues that obviously they're not big issues for, the big networks, but it was always refreshing to talk about the issues that, are important, but just don't get the sunshine by the big papers and the big networks that they should. And whether it's, what's going on in Central Africa or Central America, and I know Robert was, a deserving recipient of the George Polk Award, which, goes to people, at least it used to go to people who really put out the effort to go to into the field, into the war zones, find out what was going on. And so it was always refreshing to be interviewed by somebody who understood, because being out in the field, talking to people, not getting their information from Twitter messages or, this is usually what happens now in Washington. A few select journalists on television, they Twitter each other and figure out, oh, well, this is what the subject of the week will be. And so my experience was having the opportunity to talk about the overlooked stories, but really very, very important stories.
And what did you remark or notice about his approach to reporting?
Well, I think it was classic reporting. Digging down, getting the backstory. There's a term we don't hear much anymore. We always get what the prevailing viewpoint is, whether you're watching, CNN or MSNBC or, well, it's extreme, but Fox or the three broadcast networks. Even PBS goes along with the flow these days. But the backstory is very important, because Robert understood the backstory is that they are people talking off the record. They are confidential sources, and that is really where a good investigative journalist cuts their teeth, getting the backstory, although it doesn't go with the flow of whatever the prevailing view of a certain story is, it's important to get that information out. So whether it was people contradicting what we knew about the evidence, especially we think about that tonight after President Obama's speech, but people who contradicted this notion that there was evidence that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, very few people were willing to take on that prevailing view of that was a truism, when in fact it was made up of whole cloth, and there was no evidence that got us, involved in a very disastrous and bloody war.
Well, thank you, Mr. Madsen. I wanted to close out this interview with any last comments that you wanted to make about Robert as a person, as a personality, and or anything that you wanted to add.
Well, Robert will be missed. And the thing is today is, and I can't stress this enough, is that independent journalists like Robert, I wish we had a whole crew of people coming in, but I see it in some cases. There's some good young people coming in, but obviously independent journalism is not where the money is, but it's where the spirit is. It's where the drive is. And I think for people who really want to get involved with independent journalism, maybe not as a, you know, they're not going to make a lot of money, but I think Robert's and people like Robert are inspirations to these very few people that want to do this, because somebody's got to do it. We've got to get new people involved. So Robert was an inspiration to people who get to the essence of a story, willing to go into war zones, whether Central America, Libya, or other places, and put themselves in harm's way to get the real story out to the people, and not only in this country, but also around the world.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mattson. We very much appreciate your comments, and Robert certainly is missed, and we very much appreciate your craft, as we appreciate Robert's.
Thank you. Good to be with you tonight. Honored to join in this memorial.
Thank you. Enjoy your evening.
Bye.
Good evening. We are now welcome to, I'm very happy to have Mr. Arne Gunderson, who is a nuclear engineer and analyst, and he's a former nuclear industry executive with 30 years of experience. Welcome, Mr. Gunderson.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for taking your time out of this late hour to be with us. We very much appreciate
it. Oh, it's an honor. Robert was such a great guy.
Thank you. And I wanted to get a sense of what your experience was being interviewed by him. We know that you spent quite a bit of time speaking with him about the The nuclear crisis in the Fukushima, Japan, that took place in March of 2011. And so we got a good sense of the analysis behind the crisis and the politics behind the politics. And I was wondering if you could let me know what your experience was as an interviewee with Robert.
Oh, yeah. Robert is was one of the smartest interviewers I've ever had. You know, I've been, since the accident at Fukushima, I've been interviewed perhaps by 300 journalists, and he's in the top three. It was, you know, not only was he eloquent, and his sentence structure was phenomenal, his vocabulary was phenomenal, but besides that, and more importantly, he did his homework, and it was fun to talk with him because he was so knowledgeable. We would talk for half an hour, basically, several times during the crisis and then afterward on other matters. And every time, he was the most well-prepared journalist I'd ever met. As someone who's interviewed quite a lot, the most difficult thing is to have an interviewer who's unprepared. And that was never the case with Robert. He was brilliant, well prepared, and articulate. It was just a joy to be on the air with him.
And what were some of the issues that you would speak about besides the Fukushima?
Well, you know, obviously, what brought us together was the Fukushima accident when he contacted me. But beyond that, nuclear safety in the United States was important to him. You know, here he was broadcasting out of New York. And you've got Indian Point, 28 miles upriver. So he had, you know, concerns about emergency planning and the safety of the Indian Point plant. Beyond that, he actually elicited one of my best quotes ever. We were talking about the flooding out in at the Fort Calhoun plant, which is on the Missouri River, and in the middle of America. And he said to me, and we were discussing how they were putting sandbags around the power plant. And I said to him, sandbags and nuclear power don't belong in the same sentence. And, oh, my gosh, that quote went viral because of his show, 5 O'Clock Shadow. So it was broad-ranging from, you know, nuclear safety in the States to the Japanese experience.
Wonderful. I'm going to close out with introducing the audience to your organization, Fairwinds Associates. Could you please give us a sense of what your organization does?
Yeah, Fairwinds, there's an E in the middle, Fairwinds, is a 501c3, and we try to highlight safety problems at nuclear plants around the world. In terms that the layman understands without trying to dumb down the material. And that's where Robert was so great. You know, he never dumbed down the material. He treated his audience like adults, and he treated our material like adults, too. I will miss him deeply.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Gunderson.
Okay. Thank you.
Much
Bye-bye.
Appreciated. Take care.
And you're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. This is a special broadcast of Earthwatch, in which we are celebrating his life through his friends, family, colleagues, people he's interviewed. And also we are sharing his music. Why don't you tell us a little something about the music that we've been playing today? Not necessarily the songs. I'll give the songs. But what does this represent, this music that we're playing?
Well, when I selected the songs, I was thinking of freedom. And freedom of the spirit from the body. And also the freedom of the cosmos. And so I thought of, naturally, Aquarius, planet Aquarius, the sense of social justice, the sense of water, because mm-hmm. Aquarius is the water bearer. And I also thought of the winds of time.
Yeah.
And dust in the wind.
Yeah, and we also played Bring the Boys Home, and that was a pretty cool piece of music, and I always remember how much he would always play just the right song for the tone of the program and for the context of the story, and it was mind-blowing how much the music was an interplay of the broadcast. And I don't know that we're doing that here, because we just chose from some of his favorite selections and we're sharing them with you, the audience. And coming up next, we're going to hear Low Key Abomination, Obama Nation. So stay tuned and we'll be back with more guests.
This track is not an attack upon the American people. It's an attack upon the system within which they live. Since 1945, the United States has attempted to overthrow more than 50 foreign governments. In the process, the U.S. has caused the end of life for several million people and condemned many millions more to a life of agony and despair. The strength of your dreaming prevents you from reason. The American dream only makes sense if you're sleeping. It's just a cruel fantasy. Their politics took my voice away, but their music gave it back to me. The land where they're lumping are consumed by consumption, killing themselves to shovel down food in abundance. I guess a rapper from Britain is a rare voice. America is capitalism on steroids. Natives kept in casinos and reservations. Displaced slaves never given reparations. Take everything from Native Americans and wonder why I call it the racist experiment. Afraid of your melanin, the same as it's ever been. That ain't gonna change with the race of the president. I see imperialism under your skin tone. You could call it Christopher Columbus syndrome. Entertainer, the world's devastator, from Venezuela to Mesopotamia. Your cameras lie because they have to hide the savage crimes committed on leaders that happen to try and nationalize eating competitions while the world's been starving. Beat up communism with the help of Bin Laden. Where would your war of terror be without that man? Every day you create more Nidal Hassans. Killer man from the military, you're a weirdo, but killer walk from the Middle East, you're a hero. Your country is causing screams that never reach your ear holes. America inflicted a million ground zeros. Follow the dollar and swallow your humanity. Soldiers committing savagery you'd never even have to see. Those mad at me writing emails angrily. I'm not anti-America, America is anti-me. Relations. What matters more is the policies. I lost my patience. Stop debating, bringing race into the conversation. Occupation and cooperation equals profit making. It's over, people wake up from the dream now. Nobel Peace Prize, Jay-Z on speed. Thou is the substance within, not the color of your skin. Are you the puppeteer or the puppet on the string? So many believed it was instantly gonna change. There was still Dennis Ross, Brzezinski and Robert Gates. What happened to Chaz Freeman? What happened to Tristan Anderson? It's a machine that keeps that man breathing. I have the heart to say what all these other rappers aren't. Words like Iraq, Palestine, Afghanistan. The war's on and you morons were all wrong. I call Obama a bomber because those are your bombs. Your bomb, your bomb, your bomb, your bomb,
your bomb. Obama Nation by Low Key. The perfect song to represent the basic idea of how useful this presidency has been. Not very
when it comes to anti-war.
Yeah.
And that's what I think Low Key is all about. And right now I wanted just to give the audience, you the audience, a sense of some of the affection that Robert received from people who worked closely with him. One of his assistants, Mr. Thiago Barroso, wrote a lovely note to me upon learning about Robert's death, and I just wanted to read a section of that to you. He says, "Robert was not only an excellent teacher, but also a great friend of mine. I did not learn only about journalism from him, but also how to be a gentle human being who values intelligence and compassion." And I think that was a really lovely way of encapsulating the person who Robert was and still is in our hearts.
Yeah. And on recording.
On our recording.
Did you want to read something else? Or was that... You'll come to that a little bit later. Let's go to perhaps a little bit of Bob Dylan.
"'Twas in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel-eyed death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Suddenly I turned around and she was standing there, with silver bracelets on her wrists and flowers in her hair. She walked up to me so gracefully and took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Now there's a wall between us, something that's been lost. I took too much for granted, I got my signals crossed. Just pretend till it all began on a non-eventful morn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Well, the deputy walks on hard nails and the preacher rides a mount, but nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a feudal horn. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. I've heard newborn babies wailing like a moaning dove, and old men with broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. In a little hilltop village, they gambled for my clothes. I bargained for salvation and she gave me a lethal dose. I offered up my innocence, I got repaid with scorn. Come in, she said, I'll give you a shelter from the storm. Well, I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound to cross the line. Beauty walks a razor's edge. Someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the clock to when God and her were born. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm.
Waterloo sunset, I am in paradise. Terry meets Julie, Waterloo Station, every Friday night. But I'm so lazy, don't want to wander, I stay at home at night. I am in paradise. Waterloo sunsets I will run.
pressure, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone, oh no. Something inside so strong.
Thank you. We're back after our musical interlude, and we're now with Mr. Alan Jones, the youngest brother of Robert Knight, and welcome, Alan. Hello? Hello, Alan, are you there?
Oh, no.
I think we lost Alan. We're going to continue though, and we have been experiencing a little bit of a delay, but we're going to get it right eventually. And we have other speakers who are lined up to be with us this evening, and we're just going to get Alan back on the line.
You are tuned to WBAI Radio in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And you're listening to a tribute to Robert Knight during this Earthwatch broadcast, and there seems to have been a few snafus with the technology, the phones, and the reaching of people, which is pretty much something that would be experienced on this program on a fairly regular basis. So we're going to ask you if you have a thought or a comment, if you would like to share your memories of Robert Knight, give us a phone call at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900 would be the number to call if you would like to share your comments about either your experiences with the radio program. Perhaps you've shared a phone call. Perhaps you met or knew Robert from his work. And if you wish to make that contribution to the program, give us your call at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. And I'm going to go to his the last incarnation of his theme song with Stevie Wonder.
Freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings?
And hello, you're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to say how much I admired, and actually, I guess I loved Robert in a way because he was so brilliant. His show was so insightful, his guests, the music that he chose was always just the right music, and I miss him so much. I met him a couple of times. The first time I met him was one of the boat rides you had, and he's just so bright, so warm a person, and I just miss him, and I loved his show, Earthwatch, and also 5 o'clock Shadow. And I want his memory to stay alive. I want people to know who he was. And I just had to share something about him. I spoke with him a couple of times on air as well. And just
that's
a brilliant, loving, warm human being.
Well, thank you very much for that contribution. And have a good evening.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
bye-bye.
You for doing the show.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And hello, you're on the air.
Good evening. I'll just tell you one of my only, my chance, I actually did meet Robert along with my mother at one time, and she unfortunately passed away about 18 years ago. So when I heard about his death, I just nearly collapsed. I mean, I honestly, he was like the last guy on this station. And I remember BAI, I've been a listener to this station for well over 30 years. And I have to almost credit this, that Robert kind of made me the man that I am today. And what I mean by that is that it was always his, he was like a rock, always got kind of an anchor, a place where you listened to something. When something was going on, you were tuned into this program. I remember distinctly doing that for that numerous times. And then I remember meeting him in person at the at an old place called the Psycho Historian Conference. Now, I know we were in like these very, 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 very small group. about 10, 12 people. So he was one of the guys there, and I remember him with a small laptop, at that time the precursor to a laptop computer. And I remember that afternoon, we spent that whole afternoon with him and listening to the speaker, a gentleman by the name of Lloyd DeMoss, and I'm sure many of the Earthwatch listeners would remember him, and the psychohistorian, and I tell you, it hurts. I honestly have to say that I even when Samori died, even when we lost Doreen Canto and other people on this station, we lost, who else? Oh, God. I remember,
Recently, Ibrahim Gonzalez.
Yeah, I remember, who else? It was.
We've lost a lot of people.
Leon Crowley was his name. His name was Crowley. Was his name? I remember the gentleman. He died too. He was. But Robert was like one of the only few guys. I mean, he was one of the few people that I personally talked to on this station. I mean, he used to play music from bands that you never heard from before. I'm sure you're going through those archives. And I remember you may even come across one of those, an old song or something, because he would play bands, he really was one of the few guys left. He played one song I've been trying to find the title for it for the longest time. And I remember the lyric went like a king from another country. And, you know, that was one of the lyrics from a song. I don't even know if you've found it, but I tried to even call him to find the name of that band, because that was Robert. That's what he was. He did stuff like that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your memories. We really appreciate that.
I really do. I hope, I really hope that this part of the station or this era or something good has to come out of this slot. I mean, I hope. I don't know. Maybe it's time.
We understand your sentiment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You have a nice day.
Okay, you have a good day, too. And you're listening to WBAI in New York, and we're going to work on getting our guests back up on the air.
The bell for freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. The beating sound of the hammer for justice that pounds. When will the world stop and listen? When will we all stop and
And thank you. We've returned, and we're happy to have Mr. Dennis Bernstein on the line. Dennis is a producer and co-host of the radio news program Flashpoint Radio on Pacifica Radio, and Flashpoint originates from Pacifica Radio's flagship radio station KPFA, listener-sponsored non-commercial FM radio, and was a very, very close colleague and friend of Robert Knight. So welcome, Dennis.
And it's an honor to be here with all of you, and in the spirit of Robert Knight and Earthwatch, the show that showed me what radio is all about when you turn it into a musical instrument and play it the way Robert did. So I am honored to be here.
And can you share with us a little bit of your history with Robert?
Sure. Robert and I produced a show called Contrigate, which became Undercurrents. It was a key aspect of breaking the Iran-Contra scandal. We were light years ahead of the mainstream media. And this is all documented, whether you go to The Nation or The New Yorker or wherever the Daily News. There were things like, well, if you want to learn about the Iran-Contra scandal, you can read The New York Times in 2 years, or you can tune in right now to this little radio station called WBAI and hear history being documented and made. So Robert and I put that together. It went on for several years. It was really responsible for reviving WBAI when it was in a similar troubled situation many years ago. It was the story and the work we did, the way we used this station as an investigative tool to break open the corporate lock on real information, that changed history and brought back WBAI. And I had the honor of doing this with Robert Knight. Of course, it was the program ultimately that reported when Robert went to Panama to find Manuel Noriega in hiding. It was the undercurrents and the undercurrent show that was there that Robert was reporting on, doing that amazing story. And well, Robert is beautiful in so many ways. He taught me how to he really taught me how to do radio sound for radio, and he's obviously a sound visionary, sound mind and body and sound all the way.
I recall your mentioning during Robert's funeral a story of Elle magazine coming to get an article and a photo shoot for you, of you and Robert. Could you retell that story, please?
Well, yeah, it was definitely an exciting situation. Elle magazine, the biggest magazine in the world, wanted to come and do a story about Robert and I as radio rebels, and Robert was delighted when the filming crew from Elle showed up, and it took them 2 hours to set up a lighting situation in WBAI's ramshackle, broken-down, rat-run studio. They had about five people setting up those silver things all over the place and lights and more lights. They had more equipment than we had in the radio station, and it was amazing. They must have spent about 45 minutes making up Robert for the shoot. He was in heaven. Robert was as meticulous in his look as he was in his ability to articulate, and he loved a good picture, and so it was a beautiful and funny experience. The other experience like that is when Robert broke his Polk Award-winning story about finding Manuel Noriega in hiding. And once we broke the story, every major and minor news group in New York City was in our little rat run of WBAI on 35th and 8th Avenue. And I had about, 14 dozen reporters, cameras, tape recorders, whatever, all looking for Robert Knight. And I didn't know where he was either, so I went looking for him, and I found him downstairs in front of the mirror where he had just bought some makeup. He was getting ready.
That's hilarious.
It didn't matter. They would all have to wait because he was going to look right for his moment there in the spotlight. Not that it was ego. It was just that he believed in perfection. He wanted... he didn't. If it's supposed to be cream in the coffee, don't serve Robert, some kind of light make believe. He wanted the real thing in every way. Am I making sense here?
You are, and he wanted the real thing all throughout his life. He was very particular about that.
Yes.
And so I thank you very much, Dennis, for taking the time out to speak with us this evening from California.
And, okay, Lois.
We're going to move on to a couple of the other guests. And
okay.
Thank you so much, Dennis. And we so much appreciate what you do and your craft. And hope that you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Long live Robert Knight.
Long live Robert Knight. Thank you. Thank you.
Freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring?
Hello, we now have online Mr. Jeremiah Hosea. Jeremiah, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome.
Oh, it's a pleasure to join you guys, and I thank you guys for putting this on-air event together. It's really important that we continue to pay tribute to Robert.
Absolutely, and I knew that you were very dear to him with your wonderful musical talents, and should let the audience know that you have a band and a recording studio by the name of Earth Driver, where you play the most beautiful, socially conscious music. And they were the most exquisitely skilled musicians.
Well, I appreciate that a lot. And actually, my story has to do exactly with the Earth Driver Project and Robert Knight, because several years ago, I don't know how many, I don't even want to try to count right now, but we started Earth Driver, and it was a big coming together of a lot of different artists in our local community. And, you know, all artists who had a sort of social awareness that I scouted out and invited into a common crucible. And when I first met Robert, my mother, who's actually a former BAI producer, Marsha McBroom, had a show called Back to Basics way back when. And she just wanted me to meet Robert one day. And we went to lunch with him, and he was just very kind, and, you know, he made a great impression on me the first time I met him, and I was just so impressed in the fact that he would take the time to talk with me, a teenager at the time, and I didn't feel, you know, patronized in any way. You know, he's a very brilliant man, as we all know, but truly, truly a man of the people, and I knew that right away. And he invited me on air to talk about Earth Driver and to talk about the music I was making. And, you know, we continue to make that music. But, you know, that was right then in the early days, in the nascent stages of the project. And Robert was that kind of guy that, you know, I guess he appreciated what I was doing as a young musician, bringing other musicians together. And, you know, without hesitation, he brought me on the air, and we had a great conversation. And, you know, that kind of realness is just so hard to find. And, you know, I mean, I just can't even put into words, you know, what Robert, you know, means to me, what he represents in my imagination. And, you know, we have to continue to partake in all that information that he gathered, because thankfully, you know, it's archived. And, you know, his scope of information was astonishing, but, you know, even more astonishing was just his overall curiosity to be someone to, you know, really sink his teeth into local issues, but then, you know, to also you know, have his head in the stratosphere, and for there to be no contradiction in that. You know, he was just that vast of a person. And, you know, I miss him a great deal. My father died right at the beginning of the year, actually, like, on New Year's Day, which is my birthday, which was kind of a crazy shockwave to start the year. And then to hear Robert die a couple months later, which was totally unexpected to me. I mean, you know, it was devastating. And, you know, and I think about him often, but you know, but he's inspiring, you know, and that's the beautiful thing, you know, when you live a life like that, that I could genuinely say that if I think about Robert Knight, it makes me want to get back to the books and get back to the information and that real passion of an independent mind.
Thank you.
Cares for the people and is, you know, proud to be a member of a community, you know, in this case the BAI community, and, you know, the general community of conscientious and conscious or attempting to be conscious people all around the world. And, you know, Robert's just one of those guys. I mean, what could you say? Is he 500 years ahead of his time? Is he 1,000 years ahead of his time?
Probably,
I mean,
close to that. I'm going to have to politely close out the interview because we're heading towards the end of the program at this time.
Absolutely.
We have two more guests to
long
on.
Well, I look forward to hearing their comments.
But we so much appreciate your coming on, Jeremiah.
Well, I appreciate you guys inviting me, and I appreciate you guys hosting this program, and I look forward to the additional comments.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
Robert
indeed.
Knight, you know, lives on.
He does.
In all of us.
He does. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Enjoy your evening.
You too.
Bye. Hello. We are now very honored to welcome Mr. Alan Jones, the youngest brother of Robert Knight. Alan?
Hi.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Yes. In exile here in California.
And welcome to the East Coast. Via this interesting technology we have here. And as you can hopefully hear, there's a great deal of love in the world of BAI Radio for your brother. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on what would have been his 65th birthday last Saturday, and whatever you want to say about Robert.
Yes, that's correct. It really is a pleasure hearing all of the very kind words, very, very accurate, and very heartfelt words coming from everyone. Arne Gundersen was very accurate in what he said in terms of how Robert was able to take complex data and explain it in simple terms, maintaining the integrity of the data. Wayne Madsen with his viewpoint on it's the backstory. Well, since I was a kid, Robert always amazed me by having more information than the obvious about a situation. And growing up in that climate, it pushed you to excel. It pushed you to look for more. It pushed you to really examine the thing in front of you. So it really made a difference in my upbringing. And I think I'm much better that than otherwise, simply because Robert had such an impact on me as an older brother, as well as I see his coworkers, his listeners, and everyone else who enjoyed his company the brief time he was on this planet. But with that, I believe that pretty much sums up how I basically feel about him, and we'll surely miss him.
Certainly. And what are some of your memories of... I'm sorry, excuse me, I'm getting ahead of myself because there's so many people who we have lined up to speak about him. So we're going to actually thank you for being there. And there will be more shows like this where we certainly call you and hear more from you. And thank you, Alan, for your patience in our little technical kind of extravaganza this evening. And we will be in touch for sure.
Thank you very much. Oh, and one last piece of information, sure. As well as Bobby, is what I call him, would pursue the story. Okay. I got him involved with golf, and he pursued that with a vengeance and became good extremely fast. He just is always amazing. And with that, thanks for having me.
Thank you for having us. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy your evening.
And we'd also like to thank all of you who are tuned in to Earthwatch for joining myself, Catherine Davis, Paulette Spencer, for this special tribute program. And coming up will be Hour of the Wolf.
Better. My friends always say, Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. Good morning. Well, a heady week again. Very lovely. I never met Robert's partner before. He's very nice, and it's nice to actually come in here and have a live person doing live radio before I come in here. That is as it ought to be. At any rate, last night. That is to say, Tuesday night, we began the new season, the 24th season of the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, with Paul DiFilippo and Walter Mosley. And I gotta tell you, they are both really good performers. Paul did a wonderful thing, well, a very funny piece, and Mosley just held the audience. He is a natural performer. He knows the stage. He knows how to use his voice. He's occasionally on NPR doing his political commentaries are wonderful. But he was reading from his new novella, Jack Strong, and it was cool. And we were in a new space for us. We are at 388 Atlantic Avenue, which WBAI listeners may know the name of because it happens to be, more than happenstance, it is where WBAI's management offices are located. Our studios are here. Here? Oh, yeah, sorry, you don't see us. We're in Harlem. We're at City College of New York in Harlem. I'm not even sure what that neighborhood is called, 388 Atlantic Avenue. Is that Borough Hill?
I don't know.
I think it may be Borough Hill.
I think the only neighborhood in Brooklyn is Park Slope.
No, I live in another neighborhood with another neighborhood name, and I won't say what it is. but mine has a name also. There's a lot of non neighborhoods downtown Brooklyn. It's not a neighborhood; it's a place. And 388 Atlantic Avenue is not per se a neighborhood; it's a place, but it's really nice.
It's a nice place.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever have gone to the Atlantic Antic and walked up and down, you've passed through there. And there was a time, I would say 20 years ago, where I would not have cared to be in that area at all.
No, not without a police escort.
Yeah, yeah. But today, it's really...
much different, yeah.
Very different, very cool, very
well,
nice.
Well, Brooklyn itself
and the owner of the building, the woman who is the landlady for WBAI Management, was very good to us. So that will not be next month on October, whatever the first Tuesday of October is, when our readers are going to be Paul Park and James Morrow. There's an interesting juxtaposition. Yeah, yeah, Rick is, you need to see the face. Because, I mean, two people with, shall we say, challenging religious views. And by the way, David Silverman, if you can hear me, I would love you to host that night. David Silverman, only because his wife, Hildy Silverman, is the editor of Space and Time. It's the only reason I'm inviting David Silverman to. No, David Silverman is also the head of, what's the name of the organization? American Atheists? The group that Madeline Murray O'Hare,
the
difficult woman, used to be.
Right.
I engineered her a few times.
Right.
Difficult person. But David is now head of that organization. He's been on TV battling Bill O'Reilly. He won. he can be a little strident himself, but he's a wonderful guy. Anyway, that's but I haven't properly invited him yet. I have to send him an email. I just love the idea, though, of having Paul Park and Jim Morrow and just throw into that mix David Silverman, and people can come in and just be aghast at all of the various religious wonders and heresies that we can throw in together at one time. Not the first time we've done that. We had Jim Morrow and Charlie Pellegrino once. A better face from Rick now. So that will be the first Tuesday in October, and that will be back at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art at 138 Sullivan Street. And I'll tell you more about that as we get closer to the event. We will be back at 388 Atlantic Avenue the first Tuesday in December, when our